Yeah, some of the earlier papers here have led a lot into this particular paper, so this is going to look at the impacts of severity and other related factors in hydraulic conductivity. Okay. Just a statement about world fire and the culture of fire on Earth. There's a good book by Steve Pine on that. But fire in the sedimentary record goes back to over 200 million years before presence. It's a human tool, and humans have used it to modify ecosystems and landscapes. It's also a desertification force where too much is used, and it's a major inciter of erosion. So what I'm trying to do in this paper is to look at fire on Earth in the 21st century, some changes in fire scope and severity, and then some environmental impacts of fire on soil and water processes, and then really what are the fire effects on saturated conductivity, KSAT. Just a shot from 2005 from the satellite composite. This is the world on fire. All the red are fires that were tracked during June to August of 2005. Yellow indicates multiple fires. Green is no fire, and white is no fire. Obviously from the Sierra and parts of the Amazon basin. These fires range from fairly light, low impacts, prescribed fires, to mega fires that occur on 200 to 300,000 hectares. This is the Rodeo Chudesco fire in Arizona, which is the second largest in history because the one a few years later topped it. Anyway, these fires have major impacts on the ecosystem resources and soils. Fire has definitely jumped out of the bounds in the southwestern United States. You see, will this show up? No. Data starting in 1910 going up to 1990, it was just sort of dead flat and it was just oscillating. These are 5-year running averages. And then averaged by decade. In 1990, something happened. Right there, things changed. And what it was is all of a sudden the fuel loads hit an ecosystem tipping point. They reached a critical mass, and so there was just a lot of stuff to burn. And every time it burned hotter. And also you had changes in climate, and that all the fires from that point on were under conditions that were hotter and drier and windier than normal. This is the mega drought in the southwest kicking in. And the current data up to 2014, we're almost up to the previous decadal average, and that's only with half the decade done. I didn't add 2015 in here because the fire season in the southwest was a bust. What we're seeing is fires like this. This is the Rim Fire in California in 2013. You see all the red in there. That's all high severity fire. And it grades down to the low is the light green, and the yellow is the moderate fire. So we're seeing lots of high severity fire in these systems. And of course, they can have potential impacts on, like here, there are two lakes that are circled. And you can get, when erosion occurs in these landscapes, you get big inputs of sediment, and that degrades the water resource. So there's a concern about a lot of this high severity fire, and we know from past experience, and when this happens, you get a lot of erosion and a lot of flooding. Just sort of a shot of what the severity spectrum is on fires. You see the low in the upper part of that, that's just sort of the edge of a burned pile, and it's black. That's usually an indication of low. You get the grays in between are medium to low, and then when you start getting really white ash to orange ash, that's high. And in this particular spot, there was only a few spots that were just real high, but a lot of it was moderate to low. And another fire in Arizona with showing some high severity. You see, look at this. The virtually all organic matter has been combusted. That's the whole litter layer and any other thing above ground. And you also see spots like this showing up. They're orange, which is an indication you had high severity. So this just got nuked. This is a nuclear bomb going off. And then you got charcoal chunks laying there, which indicates that this is really, really hot. And when you start throwing together a bunch of different aspects of these fires, it produces some consequences. You first of all get the scale. If you got a really big area, you're burning tens or hundreds of thousands of hectares at once. You're getting a lot of high severity fire, and then you throw slopes in there, and plus getting the wrong rainfall afterwards, the consequences can be quite severe. So when you see a landscape like this where all the carbonaceous material has been nuked and you have a good deal of the stumps that were there they're also combusted. This is a very hot fire. And you get landscapes that look like this, where there's, you know, virtually no carbonaceous material left. It's all been combusted. And when this happens, the whole hydrologic function of the landscape changes. So when you got the organic horizon is gone, the sponge that absorbs rainfall is gone, and these landscapes then respond like no one's ever seen it before. We had the first paper talk about water repellency. I won't go into that, but these high severity fires tend towards the, producing a lot of water repellency. And you get a lot of water repellency. This leads to enormous amounts of runoff. You see the area scraped at the bottom of the slide there that I just scraped off the surface. And underneath, maybe, you know, just a, you know, maybe a centimeter or less, the soil is dry because of the water repellency. And so the water is just ponding on the surface, then it runs off. It's not infiltrating. Some other things which can happen, you can get pore clogging with ash. This occurs generally in very coarse textured soils. If you have soils that are very fine textured, there's very little macropore space. And or if you get in a situation where your macropores are not connected, it doesn't have effect. But where you've got these connected pores that will infiltrate water fairly fast, fire can have some big changes on it. Pore clogging is one of them that goes on. So it produces a soil which has gone from being very porous and permeable to non-porous and non-permeable. And upper left-hand slide, in the corner of it, you can see that black gunk coming down the slopes. That's ash from a first rain after the Rodeo Tedeschi fire. So that stuff was on the move, and that's what can often clog pores. Another thing which happens when you get water repellency and pore clogging is you get a development of rills and gullies, and you get a process like this where you have a water repellent layer that's in soil at the surface, just, you know, a few centimeters below the surface. So that's the black line there. And that prevents any further infiltration of the soil. And then you start getting an erosional process where the soil above that breaks down. And this process continues as you get down to the point where in the lower right-hand corner, you've got the soil material is gone, a rill is created, and these rills just start to become much more efficient in channeling water and erosional material off the site, and with very devastating results. So that's the point at which the rill is developing and head cutting up this, and it can actually remove substantial amounts of soil and these rills develop. And then, of course, it just transports material off-site, and you get this sort of thing happening. And this is a shot from the Schultz fire in Arizona. What you're looking at here is flow in a small channel. That's a hydraulic leap there indicating the gives you some sort of sense of the velocity of the material hitting a tree stump. And the other thing to note here is this whole surface area above here, you can see it's all glistening because there's no infiltration going on. There's water is just running off. And that's all feeding in these big flows like this. And what you're looking at in terms of flow there, half of that flow is sediment. It's what's called hyperconcentrated flow. And it's sediment in there that ranges in size from silts to Volkswagen-sized boulders. And there's another shot of a post-fire flood, and although that stream looks white, it's actually pitch black. There's that bit in the center, but it's just because of light reflection. So this is just moving a lot of material that's been ashed off-site, and it's also taking a lot of soil with it. And there's another shot from another fire showing floodwaters which have come off the hillside in the upper right. And this is, again, because of the development of water repellency and reduced infiltration in those soils. This was the first major storm in here. We figured that this flow had a return period of something like 1,000 years. And there's a long story behind how we figured this out. But this had not happened, and we used it based on the evidence of some other soils that were capped by ash and fine silts that came off that mountain. So, 1,000 years. Everyone was surprised about this thing. Says, yeah, no one was here 1,000 years ago. So you couldn't see it. And some other places you can get some really big responses. And this is from Idaho in 2002. And the guy's holding up a staff, and there's this white line at the top. And that was estimated to be the height of the flow in there, and which is totally unreal. So some of the things that occur as in terms of environmental consequences is you get the surface eroding, like on the left, and you get rills developing, and the rills quickly become gullies. But the whole system, and it's sort of a shock when you see a huge hillside, all of a sudden it's changed into, its hydrologic response has changed. And instead of being slowly metering water out, it's all of a sudden it's coming out amounts of water. And then on the right-hand side, this gets into channels and starts down-cutting like this. So some of the these post-fire runoff causes, of course, the high-severity fire, which is then leading to water repellency, and when you get intense precipitation on top of that, you get big responses. No precipitation and no response. In some cases, you have a fire, nothing happens. The second or third year, you get a really big storm, and you get a big response, and everyone's surprised. Pore clogging. We looked at that, or we have impermeable soils, or we have reduced hydraulic conductivity after the fire. So the severity effects of soils, severity effects on soils. The soil structure collapses, and the increased density of the soil, because the organic matter has served as a binding agent, the soil has been destroyed. It's been combusted. And this collapse in soil structure then reduces porosity. That's, and particularly the macropores, which are responsible for a lot of the water flow through soil systems. When those macropores are gone, then all of a sudden your flow rates drop off, and you start getting more surface runoff, which leads to those floods. And finally, the impenetrable soil surface reduces infiltration rates and produces this rapid runoff and hill slope erosion. And the loss of surface soil horizons. And one case in a fire we had 2010, the litter layer was burned off. The whole horizon was burned off. The A is gone, and half to 80% of the B is gone. And that's sort of a shocker. It leads to further declines in soil and catchment hydraulic conductivities. And ultimately, the degradation of water resources and other resources. So let's look at briefly at KSAT, which is saturated hydraulic conductivity. This is the water movement through the soil in a saturated condition. It's important for Darcy's law, which determines how much water will flow through a soil system. It's the quantity of water per unit time we typically use, measure in millimeters per hour. KSAT's the hydraulic conductivity. A is the cross-sectional area. Delta P is the change in pressure. Or it could be just on a length of soil column, or another way of looking at it is gravity. There's a natural decrease in KSAT in soils, and this is some data from a Tarek Midi-Sapris in North Carolina. And the surface O-horizon has a KSAT of 3,540 millimeters per hour. But as you start going into A-horizon and then the B, and of course the C, it drops off real rapid. So most of it, infiltration, the thing is that a lot of these, a lot of cases, while forested soils don't necessarily respond real fast to storm events, is because you've got that O horizon there, which really takes up a lot of water, and then the A horizon takes up more. But if you take those horizons off, you're down to a lot slower rates. And this is why you get a fire, and if you get a lot of erosion in the first storm, and it takes those soil horizons off, the second one comes along and responds far greater than anything you would have predicted, because it just does not have the capacity to move water. Some data from some various parts of the world showing the difference between forested soils and pastured soils, or forest and grassland or deforested. And you look at some case in Turkey there is a 40-fold decrease in the KSAT. So, and there's some data from Nigeria, from a drop from 4,990 millimeters per hour to 460 millimeters per hour, a tenfold decrease. And then you get fire, you throw fire in there. Here's some data from Australia, France, Greece, Turkey, and the United States. And here from Greece, you have a big drop-off from the unburned on the left to the burned on the right, in the upper 10 centimeters, upper 10 centimeters of soil. And then the same thing, you see a decrease in a study in Turkey, but it's not quite the same magnitude. And so you have some cases where it's often tenfold or 20-fold, in some other cases and maybe twice. But there's always a decrease going from the burned, unburned to a burned. So in summary, I'd sort of like to say that you've got the scope and severity of fires has increased. We're seeing the environmental impacts are greater, and we have reduced KSATs, one of the factors, water repellents is another factor, and that fire on the planet is very much affected by humans, and it leads to some major ecosystem transformations. And again, when you have the combination of large-scale fires, high-severity fires, slopes, and the right sort of rainfall, it leads to some very nasty environmental consequences, as we've seen by here some of the stream systems which have been ripped up by flood flows afterwards. The right was from Idaho, the upper left is from New Mexico, and the lower left is from Arizona. And that was the one, this was the one that was a 1,000-year flood. Anyway, that's a whole story in itself. That's the end of my story.
Thank you very much, Dan. We can have some questions.
Yeah, the picture you had just before this one, I think you can go back. You got a pipe going through your ravine, I guess that is a pipe.
Yeah, haven't you ever seen piping in soils?
Yeah. How many pipes failed from blowouts?
Oh, okay, that was taken on the Waterline Road in San Francisco Peaks in Arizona, and it was along a road that goes from the inner basin that takes water into to Flagstaff, and there's a road that goes down, comes off of this basin and goes down, well, buried in its pipe like this. There were about 36 breaks of the pipeline in maybe 3-4 kilometers.
So, and it's just a water pipe, it's not carrying hazardous liquids?
Oh, no, it has it. Nice, pure water.
But,
yeah, and that was a problem for the city because all of a sudden the city lost 20% of its water supply. And there were 2 years in a row they had major infrastructure damages caused by post-wildfire flood flows.
So do they have any buried hazardous material pipes in the area? This seems like a good case that they don't do that.
Yeah. No, there's none at this altitude. There's gas pipelines. Nothing carrying like something as bad as oil or something else.
Gasoline.
Natural gas.
Well, if it carries any fracking fluids,
yeah. Well, that is one of the problems, and it's often unthought of or unforeseen consequence of wildfires as you get infrastructure damage. And some of that infrastructure damage could be pipelines. As I said, there were 2 years in a row where there was major infrastructure damage in Arizona to pipelines that were carrying water that was supplying cities. Well, one city got completely cut off. But if you had pipelines carrying some nastier stuff, yes, this would be a problem. Questions? We got Ron first and then back there.
Yeah, Dan, I want to ask you a question I've asked you before. That is that part of your presentation showed the rim fire area, and I've described probably 700 or 800 soils, many of which were within the burn area of the rim fire. And out of all of those, fully 85% showed water repellency. With or without evidence of recent fire. No burn scars on trees even in a lot of these areas. So in these Mediterranean climates especially, water repellency is very, very common. And I would suggest that at least in the United States, that if the earth were spinning this way instead of this way, we'd see a hell of a lot more water repellent soils in Florida.
Florida has a lot of water repellent soils, but it's dead flat.
But we probably see a lot more. And so, given that, what you're showing here is essentially a positive feedback and a mechanism within these systems. And if it's positive feedback, why do these ecosystems exist?
Ooh. That's a nasty question. No, I won't touch that one. Why do they exist? I don't know. I'll always try to point.
I would suggest that it's probably because it's not a positive feedback mechanism.
No, it's a negative feedback.
They're negative feedback.
Yeah, I was trying to point out just the scale of high severity fire there. I could have showed you some other fires that were not in California. And but you're right. There's a high degree of natural water repellency in soils ranging from Florida to California to wherever. It's just it's naturally there, but fire aggravates it, makes it a lot worse. Next question back there, and we got another one back there. I don't know what percentage. Some do. Some say no response. No difference.
And some show, I think, an increase in
that. Yeah, that's pretty rare. There is some, but it's pretty rare. Okay, the question is about the occurrence of high severity fire. You're gonna see more of it because the fuel loads are increasing; they're not decreasing. So there's a lot of stuff out there to burn. The climates have changed. Like I've been on several wildfires recently. They say it's the fire's out of the box. It's hotter, it's windier, and it's drier. If you know anything about fire, those things are driving fire. So you're getting a lot more heat produced out there. So the incidence of high severity is going up. You're seeing more fires. When you look at the fire severity maps, they're more looking at the rim fire than what they used to before. So what was the last bit about your question? Oh, what you can do about it. All you can do about it is try to reduce the fuel load so you don't get the big hot fires. If you can't get the fuel load reduced, it catches on fire, it's going to be bad. It's going to be a lot of high severity fire. So and you look at climate change projections, Southwest is going to be warmer and drier than normal, so I would say we're going to get more fire. You look at California this year, they started burning in January, they're still burning, and they're going to burn in December, and they're going to go into the next fire season still burning. And they've got a major drought there, and the vegetation is drying out. They're the same problem in a lot of other places. There's too much fuel out there. And when that catches fire, spectacular things happen. So it's going to be a situation where it's not going to go away anytime soon. You're going to be seeing lots of high severity fire for quite a long time.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.